We come to the third and final day of this little triduum. This is the last Mass, in fact, before the beginning of the great Easter triduum starts tomorrow night. Or this year it starts tomorrow afternoon because of the curfew. And this third day, this Wednesday of Holy Week, presents us with some very heavy topics to ponder, in particular, betrayal. Once again, the figure of Judas is at center stage. Now, I know that nowadays people are not really thinking that much about Judas, and they're not really thinking much about Lent. Everybody's preoccupied with the quarantine, the ECQ, and the virus, and the pandemic, and this is what everybody talks about and worries about. But it's good to step back from the pressing moment, the pressing concerns of the present moment, and get a bigger picture. One of the things I think it's important to remember, and this is probably completely forgotten by now, is that today is the 500th anniversary of the first Mass in the Philippines, March 31st, 1521, was Easter Sunday. And so Magellan arranged to be on land. I don't know exactly how they figured it all out, but the historical record is that they had a Mass Easter Sunday morning, and then later that day, they planted a big cross on the top of a hill, which is now called Magellan's Cross and is enshrined in Cebu at the Shrine of Magellan's Cross. At least that's what they say. I don't know if the real cross is still there. So this is the 500th anniversary of the first Mass, meaning the first time that the Eucharist became present in the archipelago. It's like the planting of Christianity in the Philippines. It's a very beautiful and important anniversary, 500 years. You know that the original plan was to culminate the celebration of the 500 years this time, or this month, maybe into next month, with the celebration of the first baptism. But because of the pandemic, the celebration was pushed from last year up to this year. And then the bishop said, well, we won't conclude the celebration in 2021. We'll begin the celebration in 2021. And so they said, okay, we can't do it on March 31st because it's the middle of Holy Week. That's no time to have a grand celebration. Let's celebrate on Easter Sunday. So April 4, this was the plan. April 4, 2021, have a big celebration. Well, that's not going to happen either, at least not here in the metro area, because you can't have more than 10 people in the cathedral. So no big celebration, in-person celebration here. Maybe in Cebu, I don't know what's happening in the provinces. But anyway, the bishop said, well, we'll make the big celebration at the conclusion of the 500th year, so next year, 2022, we'll have a big celebration in honor of the 500th anniversary. You probably know there's still some dispute about where exactly this first Mass took place. The chronicler of Magellan, Pigafetta, said it was on Mazawa. And there is no place Mazawa. So the consensus is that it refers to Limasawa in southern Leyte, and that's where the country pretty much honors the place Limasawa. But in Butuan, Boy knows this very well, they point to a town called Masao, and they say that's really Masao. Masao and Limasawa are both something like Mazawa. My first time to go to Butuan, I think you were with us, Boy, maybe you even took us. We went to the site that the Butuanons honor as the site of the first Mass, and there's a big cross there, and we have a picture of us. Sister Barbara was there. I don't know who else, Mendy, Boy. There's a small group of Anuim people, and we stood at the foot of the cross, and we had our picture taken. So the Anuim at the foot of the cross. I should look that up. It's a historical event for us, my first trip to Butuan. But anyway, most people are saying that's not where the first Mass took place. If you go to Pangasinan, they say the first Mass took place in Bulinao 200 years earlier, so that's a different dispute. We'll set that aside. The reason why I wanted to bring up this historical, this anniversary is because it is a celebration of God at work in time, and this is important. When the Word became flesh, He entered into time. We celebrated last week the Annunciation. The Word became flesh at a particular moment of time, in a particular place, in a particular woman, and He lived out His life in particular places and did things. And so here He comes to the Passover, Jesus comes to His last Passover, and He's going to use this as the moment in time to lay down His life and to save us by offering Himself and to rise up and raise us up with Him. So this is not just spiritual theory. This is historical events. And in Holy Week, we commemorate real historical events like the Passover Supper. So let's turn to the Gospel of today. This is a heavy passage from Matthew chapter 26. The Gospel has three parts to it, you notice. The first part is about Judas going into town to sell the Lord. It's kind of a human trafficking incident. How much are you willing to pay me for this guy? Just like human traffickers think. They don't think about human dignity or rights or what's lawful. They just think about the money. How much can I get for this one? You get the impression from this first paragraph that Judas, if he didn't get enough, he would have offered Jesus to somebody else, maybe to the Romans. But the chief priest gave him 30 pieces of silver, and he said, okay, deal. And from that time on, he looked for an opportunity to hand him over. This day has the nickname Spy Wednesday because Judas becomes the spy. He's the betrayer. That's the first paragraph. The second paragraph is not Judas going into the city, but the disciples going into the city to prepare for the Passover meal. This topic brings up a big array of historical details. The Jews had highly developed traditions associated with the Passover. It was one of the most sacred moments of the year, and it had to be celebrated in a certain way, with certain foods, with certain clothes, with certain rituals, and it had to be done properly. Now, I don't know all the details of Passover. For sure, it was in the heart of all the Jews to celebrate the Passover in Jerusalem. But, of course, not everyone could go to Jerusalem, so for most of those who were not in Jerusalem, they celebrated it at home, in their own homes, with their families. Those who went to Jerusalem, I don't know what they did, because they weren't at home, so there had to be places for people to celebrate the Passover in Jerusalem. Well, Jesus said, just go to this certain man, doesn't mention his name, and we are going to celebrate the Passover in his house. Tell him the master is going to celebrate the Passover with his disciples in your house. Now, when the scriptures don't mention someone by name, I've said this before, we can put ourselves in the place of that unnamed person. Meaning the Passover is going to take place in our house, in my heart. Holy Week is a time to enter into our hearts, to examine our conscience, to go into the heart and find a place for the Lord and turn away from the sin of betrayal. Sin takes place in the heart before it takes place in the exchange of money. Judas's sin, he had already committed before he got the money. When he decided to betray the Lord, that's where the sin was. So the Passover meal. Remember, the Passover was the commemoration of the saving act of the Lord back in Egypt. When the Israelites were slaves in Egypt, the Lord saved them. And the way he did it was, in part, through the sacrifice of a lamb, the blood of the lamb marking the lintels and the doorposts of their homes. One of the fathers of the church, I think is it St. Gregory of Nazianzen, or one of those eloquent speakers, says that the Passover meal of the Jews was, he says, if I could dare to call it this, a symbol of a symbol. A symbol of a symbol, because the Passover was symbolic, the Passover meal was symbolic of what happened back in Egypt, and that event was symbolic of the event that is going to be celebrated tomorrow night and Friday. The real Passover is Jesus. The real Lamb is Jesus. The blood that really saves us is Jesus' blood. Now, thinking about the Passover meal, I can't help but think about St. Joseph. Why? Of course, Joseph was not there in Holy Week. But Jesus' experience of Passover in his whole life was usually a family experience with Joseph and Mary. In fact, the first Passover celebrations that Jesus would remember as a child would have taken place in Egypt. Remember, they fled to Egypt. So Jesus in Egypt celebrating the Passover with his family, or Joseph and Mary celebrating the Passover with their son, with that longing to be in Jerusalem, you can imagine what was in their hearts when they celebrated the Passover in exile, the deep longing to go to the temple, to go to Jerusalem. That would have been instilled in Jesus' human experience from the earliest years, and Joseph would be the one. Now, who was the first person Jesus heard praying the Passover prayers? Joseph. How did he learn his religious practices and the Jewish traditions? He learned them from Joseph. Jesus did not go to a rabbinical school. He learned his religion from his family, from Joseph and Mary. So the preparation of the Passover is the second paragraph of today's gospel. And then the third paragraph is the Passover meal itself. And this is where things get really disturbing, because Jesus announces, as we heard in yesterday's gospel, that one of the disciples will betray him. Now, in yesterday's gospel, he indicated to the beloved disciple who it was going to be by giving Judas the morsel. In this version, he doesn't declare it through the morsel, but when each of the disciples asks the question, Is it I? When Judas makes this statement, surely it is not I, Rabbi, Jesus pins him to the wall. You have said so. You, Judas, are the one who have made this decision. I'm not telling you that you have to betray me. You've made this decision yourself. You can even change your mind. Is this all falling on you, Judas? And the reason I'm even mentioning it is so that you will change your mind. It would be better for you not to even be born than to do this. You see how Jesus is still reaching out to Judas, even at the last minute. In fact, even in the garden, we'll hear this tomorrow night when we read the Passion again. Friday. Even in the garden, Jesus is still reaching out to Judas, still accepting the kiss. He does not turn against Judas. But what we're left with here is the Passover taking place in our home, in our heart, and the weight of the decisions that we make for or against the Lord. Surely it is at I, Lord. We all say this. Surely it is at I, Lord. Surely I would not be the one to betray the Lord. And he says, you have said so. In other words, I'm here to save you. I am not against you. I'm not holding any sin against you. I'm laying down my life for you. But the decision still is yours. You're the one who decides whether you will turn against me, whether you will reject my mercy or not. So Holy Week brings us to this place of decision, this place of conscience, this place of the purification of the inner temple of our hearts. We ask the Lord for the grace, not only to witness the Passover, not only to journey exteriorly through these moments, but to make a space for this great grace. Since we can't have any external manifestations of devotion this week, we're all locked in our homes, let us make an interior space for the grace of God to be poured into our hearts, for the mercy of God to wash over us. This is both an eternal gift and a grace for this historical moment. God works in time. The time in which he is working is the now moment. Not 500 years ago, not 2,000 years ago, now. March 31st, 2021.